This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
Good evening. Yes, this is Doug Pollard welcoming you to another magazine of news and current affairs for The Rainbow Crew. Nicola Roxon backed down and sacked one of her newly appointed men's health ambassadors. No, not Julia Gillard's hairdresser, but one of the two allegedly homophobic appointees, Warwick Marsh of the Evangelical Front organisation, the Fatherhood Foundation. Unfortunately, she has a prior engagement, so she's declined to speak to us, but we'll make up for that amongst ourselves when we talk to one of tonight's guests, Corey Earlham of the Australian Coalition for Equality, who I gather is feeling somewhat unplugged tonight, Corey.
Absolutely, I can't wait.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a minute. Now, he'll give us a rundown on the final passage of the Omnibus Bill as well, which has just gone through, as I understand the age, 5 minutes ago. The bill that changes around 100 Commonwealth laws to treat same-sex couples the same as de factos. Not quite the same as having full equality. There's other things still to do, but we'll get to that. No such good news on proposed changes to surrogacy laws in Western Australia. Rod Swift has the story there. The change of government, the unexpected change of government when Labor got booted out, has apparently stalled a gay reform that was happening over there. And World AIDS Day is fast approaching. I spoke to Deanna Blegg about the Burnett Institute fundraiser, Celebrating Africa. And we have a report from the Also Awards, where Joy got a gong on Monday. And Que Sera goes to the movies. Lending a hand tonight, my other guests are Ron Thiel and Scott Bradford. Corey, we've finally made it. Well, almost anyway. A measure of equality for same-sex couples, but still lots left to do.
Look, there's lots left to do, Doug, but I think we need to start with the point that the Labor government took to the election last year that they were going to reform some over 58 laws, which ended up being about 100 laws. They've done that now. They should be commended for doing so. We should all let them take a day's breather, and then we should start emailing them to remind them that there's still things to do in 2009.
Okay. Now, these laws have actually gone through now. They're finally...
It's done, nail in the coffin. The only thing left to do, and I love this bit, is for the first female Governor-General to put her signature to it. And that's a nice touch, that we've got a female Governor-General and same-sex law reform all in the 1 year.
Now, does this include, say, for example, Medicare?
It can cover Medicare, superannuation, pensions, social security benefits, even bankruptcy. So if your partner's bankrupt, you're now deemed to be a considered party to it.
Oh, well, that's handy. Now, I asked about Medicare in particular because I was picking up my weekly stash of drugs from the local pharmacy the other day, and the pharmacist, bless his little cotton socks, came up to me and said, "Now, you and this other fellow, you're actually a couple, aren't you?" He said, I'm a bit embarrassed to ask you and all that, but he said, I just thought I'd let you know that are you treated as a couple yet? Because you've just about hit the Medicare threshold if you are. And I said, not today, but give it another week or so and I'll be back.
I can tell you about that actually, Doug, because the pharmaceutical benefit scheme starts from 1 January 2009. It's a calendar year period. And that will start from 1 July 2009 as gay and lesbian couples will be included in that. So if you reach that that Medicare levy, etc., it won't be long and you'll be considered into a couple. So you probably won't meet this year's because you're not considered quite yet, but next year's absolutely.
So it starts on the 1st of Jan and it's what we rack
That's
up after there.
Off the top of my head, yeah.
Oh, well.
We're looking forward to getting a list together for people shortly. We just need to work through all the bills.
I was going to say, are you going to be putting something up online as to what changes and all that?
Yeah, what changes come in when? Because there's this whole series. There'll be the date of royal assent for some things. For example, on Monday, the 24th of November, the Governor-General signed into the fact that gay and lesbian parents are recognised as parents under the Family Law Act. So that same thing will happen for the two bills that just went through today, and then we'll get those dates out to everybody so they know. And the government's doing an education campaign. We'd like to see them do a bit more, and we'll be working with them on that to make sure that they teach people exactly what this means. They talk in gay and lesbian friendly language, mm-hmm. And they include us and make it specific, because people need to understand that after 10 more years of not being included when you see the word couple, if you just turn around and say de facto couple, most gay and lesbian people out there in the suburbs won't really know that that's affecting them. We need to turn around and say de facto couple, including same-sex couples.
Right. Now, a lot of people have expressed a lot of concern about Centrelink benefits and how the changes are going to affect them. If they're on benefit, or if one party is on benefit or whatever. That's being phased in over time, isn't it?
It is being phased in over time. What's happening is that the Centrelink will introduce all these changes effective from the 1st of July 2009, but in December they're going to create a same-sex removing discrimination hotline that you'll be able to call up and talk to them about what this means for you. From 1 March you'll be able to pre-register, and the importance of pre-registering is so that you don't get any penalties for being overpaid or things like that. Now, there's a lot of people out there that are very concerned about the fact that they'll lose money. There's a lot of people out there that are very concerned that they may end up getting no money. But what people need to understand is that equal means equal. I understand this might be financially hard on some people, but they need to look at it in the holistic. You might lose some social security benefits. You might decrease by $100 because you're seen as a couple, but you might find tax benefits go up because you're seen as a couple. If you're on a healthcare card, your partner may also get concession drugs as well. So there's a lot of additional things that people don't realise that are there. So I implore people just to hold out for a little bit until we can get some information out to you in December by Centrelink and various other government agencies, and more information will come through the new year. But if they do have questions, when that number's around, we'll be publicising it regularly on Joy so people can get in touch and just release some of that mental stress about wondering and anxiety about what's going to happen to them.
Mm. So it's going to be a kind of swings and roundabouts things. You're going to lose here and you're going to gain there, kind of thing. And inevitably, as you say, some people are going to be worse off, which is a shame, but as you say, equal is equal at the end of the day, and we've actually had the benefit of special treatment in effect up to now.
Yeah, and just let's not forget the cost of discrimination. You know, when you start weighing up all of the cost of being seen as a single person or not being accepted by society, is that more or less than that $100 you're getting a week? I understand some people are on poverty line, particularly aged care recipients are deeply concerned about it.
I've been contacted by a couple of people who are worried about what will happen when one of them needs to go into care, for example, and you know, the assets test and all the other stuff, because if one party, say, owns a house and the other party doesn't, that house is now going to be considered as part of the assets of the couple if one of them needs to go into care, and they're worried about losing their home and other
Thing. Today, if that happened, that couple, if it was the person who owned the home, would absolutely have that house taken out from underneath the other member of the couple. Now that they're seen as a couple, that will mean that that marital home, if you like to use that word, and we'll come back to that later, that marital home will be exempt from the asset test. So it actually means it won't come out from under them. So there's a positive when it comes to those things. But these are the messages the government needs to get through. They need to have an independent advocate giving that information. They haven't committed to that yet, and we'll be pushing them heavily over the Christmas break.
Okay. Now, that's sort of got that information out there. Now let's have a little bit of fun. What's been going on with Nicola Roxon today?
Oh, this woman. In 2004, she stood up in front of a bunch of people in Parliament and said, Labor's going to support the Marriage Act. We're going to ban gay marriage, and isn't that a wonderful thing? And then she was silly enough in front of religious people to turn around and say, oh, and we're going to introduce anti-discrimination laws to protect you for your religious freedoms, which nobody in that room actually wanted. And on Tuesday, she was silly enough to introduce this Men's Health Ambassador Scheme and appoint, out of six people, two of them were leading anti-gay slurs in Australia.
Yeah, but that was counterbalanced by having one hairdresser.
Well, I'm not going to go into the speculation that runs around about Tim Matheson and Julia Gillard as to, you know, whether they'll know much about the gay and lesbian community or not. It's a good point.
So what's happened now? I mean, she's actually backtracked, hasn't she, on one of these two alleged homophobes.
Absolutely. She's actually turned around and said that they're abhorrent in what they had to say. Interesting, about 2 hours ago, some people came out to defend them. And I just want to read a quote here. This is a quote from Jack Sonneman, the Australian Federation for the Family. And he says, and I quote from the ABC News article, "There's a reason why the Red Cross won't take their blood, and it's because they carry diseases most other people don't have. Also, we have to look at the life expectancy. Homosexuals don't live as long as heterosexuals, again, because of the practices they're involved in."
Now, hang on a minute. This is all the same old rubbish that comes out of NARTH and the Family Research Council in the USA, and this has been rubbish. This is non-scientific rubbish that they're pumping out here.
This quote that he's referring to, that was used in the Gender 21 study, actually is based on a research paper that was done of obituary articles.
That's
of
right.
People in San Francisco during the 80s. And you know what? Yeah, with the AIDS epidemic, there was a lot more gay men dying younger than heterosexual.
Yes, and if I remember rightly, what he did, he compared the obituaries in a gay paper with the obituaries in a local straight paper, a sort of normal mainstream paper, and found out, surprise, surprise, most of the obituaries in the gay paper were of younger men than the ones in the mainstream paper, and from that concluded that we die young.
Absolutely, and look, to Nicola's credit, I will give her this. Yesterday, 4 hours after this was raised to her, she made a statement saying she was investigating it and the comments were abhorrent and she found them repugnant. Today, 8 o'clock on the ABC AM program, she turned around and, having not even spoken to one of the members who she sacked, said that she was sacking him.
Now, this is the guy, Warwick Marsh, who heads up the Fatherhood Foundation, which is actually an evangelical front organisation, isn't it?
Who, interestingly, has a lot of funding from tax breaks and all that as being a harm prevention organisation.
That's right, yes.
How these comments are harm prevention, I don't really know.
What about the other guy, though?
Look, the other guy that she hasn't sacked,
Mr. Williams.
Barry Williams, that's
the one. Yeah, he hasn't actually renounced, he actually renounced what he said originally and said, I probably didn't mean it or I shouldn't have said it. So he's
I didn't read it, I just signed it.
Signed it. Interestingly, if you still go to gendermatters.org.au, his name still appears there.
Indeed.
And I suspect that it will for a very long time, even if he said he's done it. Look, the interesting thing is Barry Williams made a submission to the Family Law Act review and said that gay people shouldn't have children. He's made a number of comments over a number of years. This perhaps was the most repugnant one that he had made, and it was clearly justifiable to sack them for it. He's denounced those comments. But the fact that he is a men's health ambassador who is still out there advocating for men's health and turning around and psychologically damaging the gay and lesbian community, that he purports to protect health and promote health by saying that you're not equal and you're not able to have children because it should be between a man and a woman, I don't really feel that he should retain his job either.
Yes, indeed. It's almost the same issue as we were talking about a couple of months ago with Jeff Kennett, isn't it?
They're very closely related. Now, we have on the line with us at the moment Rod Swift, who's over in WA. Now, good evening, Ron.
Good evening, Doug.
Now, you actually said in an email you put around earlier today that you've actually discovered this guy, Williams, is actually really is homophobic. You uncovered a few things he'd written, didn't you?
Well, yes, and I've uncovered, in fact, even more examples of his pandering to anti-gay groups and meetings. The latest one, of course, that I've just uncovered on my email here is that Warwick Marsh, who is, of course, the fact member of the ambassador group, invited the unsacked at the moment member, I'm saying at the moment because I hope he does get sacked, Mr. Williams,
yeah,
to the Dads for Kids Forum at New South Wales Parliament House in June of this year.
Right.
And that Dads for Kids Forum sounds like a really, really nice, soft and fluffy organisation. Well, it was organised by Warwick and Alison Marsh and the Fatherhood Foundation, and it was designed to oppose the Same-Sex Relationships Bill 2008. I mean,
isn't it also true that Warwick Marsh organised this famous gathering of the Australian Christian Lobby in Canberra, at which Nicola Roxon put her foot in her mouth and said that the Labour Party would defend marriage?
Absolutely, 100% true. He organised the National Marriage Forum. He's organised a number of prayer forums. He's done many, many things, all behind the back of the knowing taxpayers paying public out there, all this stuff while the Howard government was in office as well, to feather the bed of extreme right-wing groups that are anti-gay. Let's face it, the National Marriage Coalition, they met, as we might recall, in August, before that terrible, terrible marriage ban, August 2004, literally days before the federal parliament rammed through the same-sex marriage ban. And guess what? Mr. Williams was a signatory to the National Marriage Manifesto. This guy is clearly either incompetent on multiple fronts if he's signing documents that are clearly anti-gay.
And without reading them, apparently.
It's astonishing, and there he is today. I've downloaded the extended interview from the ABC's AM program, saying I'm not anti-gay and all this sort of stuff, and that he's made a mistake by signing his one document. Well, he hasn't made a mistake by signing one document. He signed three documents, one to a Senate inquiry, two to these particular right-wing groups run by Mr. Marsh. His newsletters for his Lone Fathers Association constantly spruiks Mr. Marsh's Fatherhood Foundation.
Corey wants to cut in here on something.
Right, let me pose this question to you.
Bit.
21 Reasons Why Gender Matters turns around and says that gender disorientation pathology is often a symptom of family dysfunction, personality disorder, father abstinence, health malfunction or sexual abuse. My question to you is this. Do you think that Nicola Roxon sacked this guy because it was homophobic comments, or did she sack this guy because his health credentials were absolutely crap because the document turned around and had no basis of truth? Is she actually an advocate for gay and lesbian people, or is she just turning around and realising that this guy has no health credentials whatsoever, just like a hairdresser?
well, not to besmirch any hairdressers out there listening at the moment, and I say that completely jokingly. Look, I think it's both, but more disturbingly, I think that now this particular issue's hit, I think Nicola Roxon and her office have decided to delve, as I have done, into some of the references in this 21 Reasons Why Gender Matters document explains. Now, you were mentioning just before I came on air this the comparison, the Paul Cameron studies from the 80s about measuring the average age of death of gay men. Well, he's actually... this particular document actually doesn't quote that study, because that's been well and truly roundly disproven. It's unscientific. And in fact, throughout this Gender Matters document that they've put together, there's a whole heap of quasi-science and pseudo-science in all these studies they quote.
Yeah, and they also put, yeah, as you say, distortion, they also put bizarre spin on certain items. I remember one which was talking about rates of HIV infection and short-term relationships and all that, which turned out to be a study by the Amsterdam equivalent of the VAC into young gay men with multiple sexual partners.
Absolutely.
Doing the back rooms of Amsterdam.
Yeah. I mean, for example, the one that we're talking about here about, the reasons for homosexuality is, you know, out-of-touch father, psychological problems, body issues. Well, that's one study that's come from a website called peoplecanchange.com. Now, I actually went there, had a look at it. It directly referenced it in this Gender Matters document. But when you download that particular study, it actually measures 200 people who are going through or have been through a gay curing program, and I like to call it that because it's a joke. And more importantly, when you scroll down through their statistics, they'll go, oh, 90-something percent said that it was something to do with an absent father, and 91% said this, and 85% said this was a factor. They forget to mention that 50% say genes is a factor, and 50% say biology is a factor. No, that's conveniently erased. And this is the sort of selective quoting and pseudoscience they participate in, and it's wrong. I think that Nicola Roxon's office has probably got onto this document and saw some of the stuff that references NARS quotes and just thought, who are these crackpots? It's
oh, we do. We love NARS, don't we?
Yes, well, we all love NARS. Well,
Rod?
You know, the misquoted Spitzer study and the Satirica study. I mean, one of the classic ones this group uses as a Charles Sturt University research.
Rod, I'm just going to cut in there and I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think the fact that the community, and I'm not talking about the gay and lesbian community, came out so strongly against this document that says they claim to be all about gay and lesbian people shouldn't have children. How do you think that's going to play out here in Victoria when we start talking about surrogacy again next week? How do you think it would have impacted WA on their surrogacy laws, given that so many people have strongly come out and said it's a load of crap?
Well, look, I could only hope that it has a positive effect. But you're absolutely right. When you look at this document, and I'm just taking, if you grab the average Australian person now, straight or gay, doesn't matter, and that you get them to sit down with this document and read it, and read just the litany of abuse that it is, all 24 pages, you'd think you were looking at a different planet. And I think that's what is the most damning thing about this document.
Well, actually, you are looking at a different planet, Rod. It's called America.
I was going to say Cloud Cuckoo Land will be the one I'd be looking at. But you look at this, and what an average person would do is reading this document, then they'll compare it to all the people who they may know who are GLBTI and say, wait a second, this is crazy. And I think that that is what's so telling about this document, is that it is completely, purely fantastic in its nature, and fantastic not as in good, fantastic as in completely unbelievable.
Yes, what they produced by a load of what in America they call wing nuts, I believe.
Well, allegedly,
I was going to say it might have been produced by women from Square State.
Allegedly, according to the Vice President of the Australian Family Association, it's an obvious contradiction when those who pride themselves on being inclusive exclude the views of a well-researched document. It's appalling when elected officials engage in this practice.
It may be a well-researched document, but I'm sure that other regimes that have been anti-gay in the past, or even anti-other minority groups, I won't mention which ones, also had well and truly researched propaganda.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Now, look, well, let's get off that one for the moment. Specifically over in WA, you've got a surrogacy bill floating around over there. Now, I gather it's run into a certain amount of trouble now that you have a Liberal government rather than a Labor one.
Well, that's true. Surrogacy, as we all know, around various states of Australia is currently going through a bit of a revamp and a spring clean, and in some states it's being introduced for the first time, and WA is one of those states. And we've actually had the surrogacy bill now before our parliament, and our new Liberal government has said that they want to pass it as a priority. The disappointing thing, though, is that they've defined what an eligible couple is for being able to commission a surrogacy service, and it says two people of the opposite sex who are married to or in a de facto relationship with each other.
Ah.
Yes. And who are unable to conceive a child due to medical reasons. Now,
and their reason?
Well, the reasons behind this are crazy, because if you put it in parallel to other technologies that allow people to have childbirth, like IVF, assisted reproductive technology and the like, which in WA we have the complete open laws in that regard, or even adoption, which again WA has, there's no reason to narrowly scope the surrogacy bill the way it's been done. And in fact, it won't cause anything but a big problem, and that is the continuation of what happens now. It'll be done in a backyard agreement style fashion. It won't protect the rights of the kids who might be born to such a ad hoc agreement between, for example, gay men and a female a person who chooses to act as an unlawful surrogate. And of course, it would make the surrogate in that situation, the mother, the birth mother, a legal parent and not extinguish their rights. It's terrible because it means that there'll be two standards for surrogacy arrangements in WA, a lawful one and people who choose to flout the law because they want to still have kids.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to have to leave that one there, Rod, because we're running low on time around here. But thanks for your contribution this evening. And best of luck. Obviously, we've still got a long way to go with a lot of laws, especially at state level.
Yeah, and look, just one other thing on the federal front as well, and I don't know if Corey mentioned this earlier, and if I can say it quickly, there is still a lot of work to do on the federal front.
There's
a whole heap of bylaws that haven't been changed yet. I happened to spot one in duty-free regulations the other day. in fact, that only a husband and wife can pool their duty-free allowances. There's still a lot of work to go in regards to the regulation front.
Oh, well, Christians won't like that one, you know.
Oh, no, because remember, if you combine your alcohol and your duty-free allowances, it's obviously an affront to God and will destroy the planet as well as marriage.
Indeed.
Especially if it's for cigarettes.
Yeah.
The sky will fall in.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rod Swift.
I was going to say that I'm sure I have the research out next week about it.
No doubt. Thanks, Rod.
Thanks.
You're listening to Doug Pollard and guests on The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
Monday is World AIDS Day, but before that, tomorrow night, the Burnet Institute is running a fundraiser tomorrow called Celebrating Africa. And earlier today, I spoke with Burnet Institute Ambassador Deanna Blegg. Good evening, Deanna. How are you?
Good evening, Doug. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, we've met before when you were part of the Speakers Bureau for people living with HIV/AIDS, I believe.
That's right, yes, 2 years ago.
Yes, and now you're a competition athlete, aren't you?
I have been competing in the adventure racing circuit for 2 years now, and very addicted to it.
So you're obviously pretty healthy.
Very healthy, yes. Just come back from competing in the Mark Webber Challenge down in Tasmania, which was a fabulous event as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with the Burnet Institute?
Well, there's a connection between the Burnet Institute and the adventure racing scene. The Anaconda Adventure Races raise money for the Burnet Institute. Mm-hmm. So in that way we were linked, and then they contacted me and asked me if I'd like to be an ambassador. Being HIV positive and also competing at in adventure racing, I guess, is a nice little mix because they both support each other.
Mm. And it's a good positive image, if you if I can put it like that. Now, what's this event tomorrow night? It's called Celebrating Africa. Tell us a bit about that.
That's right. The event tomorrow night's a fundraiser for the Burnet Institute to commemorate World AIDS Day. Now, Burnet Institute do work all through Asia and around the world with local community groups, and this event is to support the work that they do in Mozambique.
Mm-hmm.
And Burnett's, there's another youth ambassador, a Collingwood footballer, they call him Harry O'Brien. He'll be presenting, as well as Joe Chandler, and they've just both come back from Mozambique. So it'd be very interesting to hear what's going on over there, especially with the work that Burnett does over there.
Yeah, and you've also got a dance band.
Yes, Musiki Manjaro. I remember them from many years ago, and I haven't seen them for at least, I think, about 8 years, and it's great to hear they're still out there. And it's going to be, they do have fantastic music, African-based themes, great to dance to, and anyone that loves the rhythms and the music from other countries will really enjoy this band.
Why do you think people should come along and support the event, apart from coming to have a good time?
Look, the World AIDS Day theme this year is Enjoy Life and Take Control to Stop HIV and AIDS. And around the world, there are over 30 million people infected with the HIV virus. And whilst those numbers in Australia are quite low, there's still an increase in infections throughout Australia. So, number one, for people to realise HIV and AIDS is still out there, and especially just to respect what's going on in the rest of the world and learn about what's going on. We're quite isolated over here. In Australia, I think there's 18,000 people infected with the HIV virus. Over in Mozambique, the population percentage is 20.5 million.
Ooh.
Oh, that's the population, and of that, 16% are infected with the HIV virus.
That's a huge burden on the health service, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and people don't realise that here. 50% of those infected are women and children, and in the world it's a 99% through heterosexual infection.
Right.
So, you know, it's just an awareness. There's also a beautiful photographic image display that it's called A Moment in Mozambique, a beautiful photographic exhibition. I've had a look on the website at some of the photos and, you know, just very, very powerful images. And we need to know what's going on in our world. We need to support what Burnet's doing with their research and help in these communities. I think, you know, the music's going to be great, the environment's going to be great. There's also an auction there as well, so you can raise money for the Burnet Institute.
Okay, yeah. Well, that sounds like a pretty good cause then.
I think so, Doug.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time tonight, Deanna.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was Deanna Blegg there, ambassador for the Burnet Institute. If you want more details on Celebrating Africa, featuring African dance rhythms band Musiki Manjaro, it's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. upstairs, Retro Cafe, 413 Brunswick Street, Fitzroy. It costs $35, including nibblies, it says here. If you want tickets, you contact Hazel on 9282 213. 92821135. That's 92821135. Or email her, hazel@burnett.edu.au. Now, we've had a couple of messages in. I'll just read one of them before we go to the next item. Talking about the Gender Matters document that we've been rubbishing, Kylie says, this document is offensive to everyone. I particularly love the picture of the pregnant woman displaying her gold wedding band proudly on her great big belly. So, obviously, terribly, terribly marriage-oriented.
Unless she's a Californian lesbian.
Or from Massachusetts, perhaps, or even Iowa. Okay, you're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. If you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is The Rainbow Report.
And this is your host, Doug Pollard. With me in the studio, Scott Bradford, Corey Earlham and Ron Thiel. Well, we thought we'd better actually make a mention of the fact that we all frocked up on Monday night and had a gay old time at the Also Awards. And Joy was there, made a few little recordings. We thought we'd bring you a flavour of the evening with snippets of some of the presentations. And we'll start with the award for the most outstanding event.
And the winner is Midsummer Festival.
Thank you so much, everyone. This is a real honour. But obviously the real winner of this award are the volunteers who make up Midsummer and the outstanding community producers who put together about 90% of the festival's program. So really, we'd like to say a huge thank you for them. We look forward to seeing you at Alexandra Gardens on the 18th of January for the 2009 Carnival Day. And it's another fantastic program coming together, so there'll be something for everyone in Midsummer 2009. Thank you.
Well, you can tell from that, A, there was a very noisy audience, and B, there was a very poor sound system working at the venue. Apart from that, it all went off really well. Anyone kind of surprised by Midsummer getting that award? I mean, they were up against the Out Games, Pride March, Chill Out,
I would have thought
film.
The Out Games would have romped it in.
Well, that's what I thought as well. You know, there was nothing particularly special about Midsummer last year that I remember.
And, you know, the gay games only come around every 4 years, so... Mm.
But is it because the award was most outstanding event and Midsummer's the biggest one that it wins it time and time again, that people actually don't look at the quality of the detail? People don't attend all the other events in as large a numbers?
I suppose it's the one... Would you say, Ron, it's the one that like, nearly everybody goes to, whereas the other one's a bit more specialised?
Well, look, I mean, you know, the reality is that I tried a couple of things at Midsummer last year, and unfortunately, for various reasons, one of them due to the weather, they didn't work. Mm. But, look, you know, these Also Awards, I reckon it's all a bit predictable.
Well, it certainly seems that way.
I think it's all a bit provincial. I think it all smells a bit of the Friday night bar culture. I mean, there's some very, very, very...
Chuck Raffle time.
Well, you know, there's some very prominent names which are missing. Gary Singer, for example, who was, you know, substantial in getting us this building and has been a rock-solid supporter. Matthew Mitchum, who, you know, was recognised as being, the greatest sports person in Australia. And you just sort of get the feeling, like, you know, Barack Obama for mentioning the word gay during his acceptance speech. And even Kevin Rudd for the legislation.
Yep.
And,
don't give it to Kevin the credit, okay?
Well, you just sort of get the feeling that unfortunately this award ceremony just looks a bit low, and that those sorts of people who've made really substantial contributions, or edgy people, just like aren't...
Well, I think
on the radar.
I think there was a little bit of that. We just mentioned there that the Out Games didn't get the most outstanding festival, but they did get something else, the most outstanding community contribution.
And the winner is the first Asia Pacific Out Games.
Lorraine and I would like to thank all of you who made the first Asia Pacific Out Games a possibility. It consisted of 12 sports, a two-day human rights conference, and obviously a cultural program for our host partner, Midsummer Festival. It was 63 organisations coming together to celebrate gay and lesbian life in Melbourne for our Asia Pacific community.
And whilst Peter and I have been the face, well, he's been the face and I've been the voice of the ART Games, this is an opportunity for me to really acknowledge, or for us to acknowledge and thank our board and management team. I won't go through their names, but they gave up their lives for 12 months. So thank you, guys.
Joy. 94.9.
The Also Appreciation Award. This award goes to someone that has made an extensive contribution to the health and well-being of our community and substantially advanced the understanding of the needs and interests of young people within our community. Not someone likely to be well known to everyone, but who, from an Also perspective, have truly made a difference. And the award goes to
Dr. Lynn Hillier. Now, as the award suggests, you may not know Lynn Hillier, but you actually should, because Lynn's done some great work, informative work in the understanding of same-sex attracted youth, in writing themselves in and writing themselves in again 6 years on. So, congratulations, Lynn. Well done.
Say, I'm speechless, almost. I feel as though I've been incredibly fortunate over the last 12 or 13 years to just be in a wonderful spot working with fantastic people who are passionate and who care about same-sex attracted young people, and I can't believe this has happened.
That was Dr. Lynn Hillier from Australian Research Centre for Sex, Health and Society. She's done an enormous amount of good solid work in the background there, providing the statistical underpinning for a lot of legislative changes.
And it's great to see someone getting an award and getting recognition. Like they said, we've never heard of her before.
No, she works with Anne Mitchell at Gay and Lesbian Health, as I say, at the Research Centre for Sex, Health and Society. She worked long time on same-sex attracted youth, particularly in rural areas, for that Writing Themselves In and Writing Themselves In Again report, revisiting it years later. So there's a lot of good, solid statistical work there that, as I say, has made a... And I know at the Rod Mitchell Trust we've placed a great deal of credence in that report of hers, and it's been very instrumental in getting people like the VCFL and VFL and the AFL to listen when you show them the statistics that she comes up with about people feeling unsafe, gay people feeling unsafe at sporting events and so on and so forth. So well done, Lynn Hillier.
The Lifetime Achievement Award. And this award goes to an outstanding individual who has made a consistent contribution to our community over time.
And the award goes to Bruce McKenzie.
Oh, my God, what a surprise this is. As I suppose, as I say in the classics, you're around long enough and stay around, you end up doing getting something. I'd like to thank everyone. I'd like to thank, you know, been working in the community for over 20 years, met some lovely, lovely people, worked with some lovely people. I'd just like to thank everyone also and everyone who voted. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm shocked.
Congratulations. It couldn't have gone to a more beautiful person.
Well, yeah, somebody's going to have to fill me in here because obviously I don't go out on the scene, so I had no idea who Bruce McKenzie was, but I gather he's been managing DT since
Corey and
forever.
I've got a bit of a different...
Being the younger person in the room, I do attend the bars every now and again, and I have to say that the fact that Bruce McKenzie runs a raffle every week, the fact that that gets donated to a gay and lesbian organisation every week, the fact that he's always willing to help out any community organisation along with the owners of DTs... And the fact that he's just there to generally as an ear to chew on, to talk to, you know, this is what I love about community awards, because it's these type of people who don't have profile, who don't have a publicity machine, who don't have a Facebook friends group to vote for them online, that actually do get recognised in things like lifetime achievements. So well done,
yeah,
Bruce.
Absolutely.
Good
I
choice.
Agree. Yep. Yep.
I thought you were going to disagree with him.
No, we just had a different term. I called him the bar manager and you called him the bar wench.
Sorry about that, Bruce.
But, yeah, just to go add on to what Corey said, I mean, he is the face of DTs, and any time that you go there, he's talking to everyone. He's not just managing the bar staff. He's talking to the patrons. If anyone goes to DTs on a Friday night, he's walking around with the raffle. He's making sure that people are buying for the barbecue, and... I can't imagine anyone on the scene who's more deserving than Bruce.
Yeah, because people like that are kind of like the glue. Well,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
People like that are kind of the glue the whole community get together, aren't they?
Yeah, he's like...
Just like you, Doug.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I don't go around running Chuck Raffles. Maybe I should. Maybe I should. And maybe I should take down the Facebook page, but... It gives too much away. My sister's now hooked into my Facebook page and wants to know what I'm getting up to.
Oh, I'll say hi to her when I'm online next.
Okay. Now, the important one from our point of view, or from my point of view, was the Most Outstanding Media Award.
My name's Lorraine, and I'm here to read out the nominees for Most Outstanding Media Contribution. And that they are Joy 94.9. Where would we be without Joy in our life? MCV, Melbourne Community Voice. And Q Magazine. And the winner is Joy 94.9.
Nick Bassett, Will Conyers, Paul Anthony. We have all seen the Oscars, so we decided to keep this very short because we don't want to get played off. Next Monday is December 1st, which is World AIDS Day. It's also Joy's 15th birthday, so we've come a long way.
And echoing the sentiments of the Also Foundation, we also want to say that it's very important that what we do at Joy is respected by our own community, but more importantly, is respected by other communities, but from the outside in and from the inside out. And this way we might go some way to make a change. Thank you so much also.
Okay, I'd just like to thank the volunteers at Joy, because if it wasn't for the volunteers, we wouldn't be here. Also like to thank the members. If you're not a member, you need to be a member. And we'd like to all thank the listeners and everyone here tonight. Cheers.
Well, I think I must have been the only Joy person there who wasn't up on the stage when the award was handed out. My nomination for the surprise award of the night was Quiet Achiever, which was a tie between Felicity Marlowe of Love Makes a Family and Ken Camp and YOLO. Neither of whom is particularly quiet in my experience. But
I don't know.
I was glad to see them pick up a gong. You know, I was glad to see them both pick up a gong. Victorian AIDS Council also won a gong for their campaign Drama Down Under. So, Corey, overall, what did you make of this awards business?
Look, I think community awards are a really, really important thing for the community to celebrate the year that they've just had. I take two exceptions to the ALSO process, and this is a personal opinion, this isn't an organisational opinion, and I respect the work that ALSO does, and particularly the people involved in ALSO. My only comment is this. If you're going to have a community award process, then let the community nominate for the people who are being put up for the award. What we had this year was we had five people in each category pre-selected by a panel of 12 judges that were nominated by the ALSO Foundation saying, okay, community, these are the five most deserving people. You choose which one wins. That's not a process that's fair. Call for nominations. At least get some feedback on it. Even if it's the 12 judges that make the decision, at least engage the community earlier on. Maybe it was because it was rushed or because it was the first year. I'm not sure. But hopefully also, after they finish their AGM tonight, take that feedback on board and try and improve on it next year.
Well, as you say, they're having their AGM tonight upstairs, just above us, right now, in fact. So you could nip up there and have a word with them if you wanted to.
I'm in the mood today.
Yeah, you're in a kind of what my father would have called demobilisation happy. You know, the war's over and you're ready to get out of uniform by the sounds of things.
Throughout this whole process, Doug, I've been appalled to be called an activist. I've said to every senator, I'm an advocate. I'm an advocate. Yes. I'm an advocate. But today, when we dealt with such blatantly homophobic person, people like that ridiculous Gender 21 Matters document, I was proud to be an activist. And if I could have gone and burnt my bra in front of their office, I would have done so.
Now, you also mentioned off air, while we were listening to some of that, that there's another milestone coming up on Monday.
Yeah, the Victorian Relationship Register comes into effect on the 1st of December. So if you want to get involved, get down to the births, deaths and marriages for, I think, a 9 o'clock start and be one of the first to register. If you're interested in talking to the media, give also a call tomorrow. Give them a little bit to recover from their AGM call after 10 and let them know that you're interested. This is fantastic. It's a step forward and it just shows that we're getting there in the end.
So this all ties in with the legislation that's just gone through Parliament at the moment with the anti-discrimination legislation, or the omnibus legislation?
No, this is a state law. It was passed earlier this year and comes into effect on the 1st of December.
Yeah, yeah, but if you register your relationship, then you're eligible for all this new...
Absolutely. You don't have to prove your bank account.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't actually have to register, you know, like you don't have to get married. You can just deem yourselves to be de facto, can't you? Okay, well, it had happened. This week, Kay Sara looked under her bonnet and found... a movie, or is it just a very long tourism ad? Here she is with her personal take on the big Aussie blockbuster imaginatively entitled Australia.
Movie trailers are done, the screen widens, the music swells, and before you know it, we're swept up in Baz Luhrmann's epic monstrosity, Australia. Crikey! There's a lot riding on this film. To be precise, around 180 million. And then there's the career prospects of the leading lady. Our Nicole desperately needs a hit. One Oscar under the wing doth not a movie star make. Certainly not one that commands a cool 20 mil per gig. Fortunately, Nick rises to the occasion, prancing around the dusty Aussie interior like a peacock on heat. She gets to play the prissy English Rose to Hugh Jackman's rugged, bestubbled Rover. And if it weren't for her Botox-ridden face, the polished surface of Uluru has got nothing on that inanimate forehead of hers, she could have been really sensational. So frustrating is that pale, steely face. Our Nick spends most of the film, mouth agasp and glassy-eyed, desperately trying to emote. But that's being unkind. She does pull off some fabulous punchlines, my favourite of which is, "Over there in the Billabong." Think Julie Andrews getting her kit off in the 1970s shocker SOB and you're in the right ballpark. Now, for Hugh Jackman, my, dark, dreamy, 6-foot-something and built like a brick veneer proverbial. Crikey, mate, you beaut! Not that I'm saying sex appeal is everything, but in Hugh's case, it's possibly a key factor in buying a ticket, kicking off your heels, and chowing down on the overpriced boysenberry choc top. It's not so much that Hugh can't act. The man took on Peter Allen's story on Broadway, for crying out loud, and still managed to convince the world that his wife, the lovely Deborah Lee Furness, is the only one. It's just that, in Hugh's case, all of the window dressing gets in the way of the core message. It's like the Myers windows at Christmas time, all stuffed motorized animals, and somewhere, encrypted in the tacky voiceover, there's the bare bones of a great fable. Most satisfying in Australia is the performance of newcomer Brandon Walters, who plays the young boy, Nala. Of mixed race, his father is white, his mum Aboriginal, Brandon carries the hope of the nation on his slight shoulders. If Baz's epic tale, the centre point of which is the power of our Indigenous people, doesn't prick the conscience of white Australia, nothing will. Saying sorry is one thing. Looking to Indigenous cultures for inspiration and understanding is quite another. For a better look at white fella's take on black Australia, check out Nicholas Roeg's 1971 film Walkabout. It's a stunner. The central character is played by David Galpilil, who reprises his role as the mythological elder in Baz's blockbuster. He even gets to stand on one leg, just like those Aboriginal images on your mum's souvenir tea towels. Crikey. So Australia ain't about to win critical acclaim. It's far too crass and too clunky to warrant that. But I'm willing to bet it will do great business overseas, particularly in America. As far as they're concerned, we're all kangaroo-hopping, crocodile-wrestling Steve Irwins anyway. Oh, did I mention there is a croc scene in this film too? Crikey! I'm Kay Sara, and just like our Nick, I've got a thing for the outback. Or at least that thriving herb pot on the corner of my balcony.
Well, you could practically make that review into a movie itself. Call it Bonnet versus Botox. Okay, well, that's it for this week. My thanks to my guests today, Corey Earlham and Rod Swift, both from the Australian Coalition for Equality, Deanna Blegg from the Burnett Institute, to the Also Foundation for their awards night, to Kay Sara, to Ron Thiel and Scott Bradford. Not forgetting my producer, Bianca, and technical producer, Michael. Corey, what are you waving your finger at?
Very quickly, you have to tonight say thank you to the community for for all the work that they've done to get these laws through.
Yes.
Listening, and advocating, writing letters. Thank you all.
And don't forget, there's lots more still to do. And I'll be back next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.